Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
More show.
Yeah, another one.
More games have been played.
We're on a roll with what we're playing, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's like we've been playing lots of stuff. Kinda.
Yeah. And new stuff as well.
Well, sorta. Yeah.
Well, okay, I've played a bit of new stuff.
I am very set in my habits, generally. Well, it's a value thing, isn't it? You pay money for a computer game, or you don't in this free-to-play age, and then you think, well, I've got to get my money's worth here, and you
say that, I'm going to talk about the same game I played for the last 3 weeks as well. So,
okay.
Why don't you start with one of yours?
Start with Rift, then. Yes, still playing that. So, yeah, we're doing...
How's the guild?
The guild's still intact, although we had a bumpy one this week, but under the official tournament rule guidelines on guild permadeath, this week's wasn't eligible for the wipe permadeath thing.
Why not?
Because we were four-manning it, and we were doing a normal mode, not an expert mode anyway. We had a bit of a short turnout this week, so we went and did one of the ones we hadn't done before in normal mode. Mostly, I was a bit sneaky, actually. I didn't tell any of them this. No, none of them listen. But this was off the back of my own soloing stuff during the week. So I've been...
Were you experimenting on your friends again?
No. I was utilising available resources for the benefit of all, to help them, to help us, to help us, everyone and stuff. You know, it was all right. It was fine.
Were you treating your friends as content again?
No. I was treating them as a disposable resource. No, you see... So I've got to the end of Rift. I've got to level 65. I've got all the stuff. I'm working on my planar attunements. That's all gone quite high up. I've got some reasonably good gear, some of the top-end crafted stuff, apart from the bits where you have to, like, grind out 20-hour cooldown tokens and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I thought I was doing pretty well. I thought I was settling into a comfortable end-game pottering about type thing. And I really haven't, as it turns out. I was looking around and I was thinking, okay, well, what does everyone else do when they get to this stage? Obviously, you can quit and go play something else, but I'm not quite done yet, and I quite enjoy the world of Tilara. I quite like wandering around Rift doing my thing, pottering about. But there's got to be progression. There's got to be, you know, goals to keep working towards, and previously I'd said that was just going to be fishing, really, for me, and cooking and stuff like that, crafting. And I'm doing all right with those, still doing with those, but I thought I'm going to have a go at some of this end game stuff. Look at some of this these raid armors and stuff, and all these weird currencies at the top that people seem to spend a lot of their time in organisation and shouting in general chat to sort out and accomplish. And this happens to me every time I get to the end of an MMO. I see the token grind for raid gear and all that sort of stuff, and I teeter on the edge and I try a little bit of it, and basically it just reminds me that there's no place there for me. It's not my thing. But I thought I'd have a go. So I was doing... I was talking about my Void Knight tank spec last time and how well that was all going. Tried a pickup group this week with that on the expert mode Storm Legion, looking for group random four idiots and me versus the monster. And it went really badly. I went out, so I hit the random button thinking, yes, and I ticked all the rolls as well. That's utter complacency. Yes, I could do anything this game could throw at me now. Oh my god. So it picked me as tank for the Archive of Flesh dungeon, which the backstory of which is all your atypical, you're very typical, rather, Geiger-esque gribbly black walls with all the ribbing on and stuff. And it's basically a death themed place run by the Shapers, who are a bunch of sort of floaty bone lich people who like to reshape living organic matter in the name of art. That's their big thing. That's their stick. So I'm lead tank in a group of five in expert mode in a dungeon I have never seen before.
Okay.
Yes.
So somewhat expected to take the lead, as it were.
Yes, taking the lead. And so obviously I was expecting all four of my random teammates who I've never met before to be kind, patient, considerate, and explain to me where we're going and stuff. Although, in my own defence, I didn't ask. I just thought, oh god, this is awkward. And then just, basically stood on the start of the entrance where we all turned up, and there's five of us all standing there. And sort of, you know, mentally looking at each other, and I'm thinking, wow, I think I would rather just wipe the team than let this social awkwardness continue for any second longer. So I just charged straight into the first room and off we go, and it didn't really go well. So the first room is a big sort of looped shape, a big sort of oval with a load of statues all around the outside of these Shaper creatures, and in the middle of it all is a giant sort of gorilla type monster that's like four or five times taller than I am, with laser death eyes. And basically, this is your first boss fight mechanic, and the idea is that it will slowly walk around the oval, and then sometimes stop and turn around and go the other way, and you've got to not be seen by it, because it's invulnerable and will insta-kill you. And what you've got to do is you've got to work your way around it to trigger these various statues to come to life, kill, you know, drag them off to a corner and kill them, and then eventually, after you've done enough of that, the big gorilla monster leaps up onto a balcony, and then the next phase starts. So I had no idea about this at all. I looked at the monster and I thought, well, okay, looks like this is probably a tank and spank fight. So I charged straight in. Yes, there was a lot of. I was very good. I kept its aggro for all of the 3 or 4 seconds that it took for it to destroy me, and then it sort of ran around wailing on the rest of the team. And there was a lot of stony silence as we all rezzed back at the start point. I think there was one or two. I think the sole tirade of incredulity that came from any of the teammates was one bloke put a question mark in party chat. So at that point, I thought, oh, okay, fine. So I have a look at his tool tips on the monster. I think, oh, okay, this is a gimmick, isn't it? And I sort of jocularly type into party chat, oh, so you're not supposed to be seen by the big guy then? Nothing, you know, tough crowd, you know. I'm here all week, try the fish. So I've sort of managed to basically, through trial and error of one party wipe, managed to work out the basic mechanic there. So we get through and get that first bit done. These four people, it's highly, highly unlikely that any of the other four people in this team are also doing this for the first time.
Oh, no,
ever.
They know exactly what they're
they've
doing.
They've read guides, they've seen walkthroughs. Not one of them says anything after I barrel straight into it. I don't know if they perhaps they just didn't believe what they saw. Maybe they thought they'd imagined it all. Anyway, so we get up to, so there's a balcony section on the top. The next phase is that this giant gorilla monster is now up there, and he's still got 4 stacks of 25% damage reduction on him. So, you know, basic maths. You do the math. That makes 100% damage reduction. He's invulnerable, yes. And then there's another thing there that says something.
It depends. Do the 25 go on the existing value? Or?
Oh, wow. It might be 87.3.2. Yeah. No, basically, he's invulnerable. But the tooltip helpfully says that something called bone shrapnel will work on him. Now,
did you have any bone shrapnel?
I don't even know what that is. I'm a void knight. I've got a thing where I hit a guy with a shield. Sometimes I can do a dark magic thing and make them go zap. None of the rest of the team are really saying much at this point. I don't know whether that's just, you know, because it is an absolute mortal, grave, unforgivable sin to talk to the rest of your team in a pickup group party chat thing, or whether they were literally incapable of typing. Perhaps they didn't really know what the big large rectangle with the letters on in front of them was for. But then again, you know, I'm as much to blame as anyone else because I didn't really ask what do we do here, because I didn't really want people to think I was an idiot, despite my, you know, earlier first showing, pretty much conclusively proving I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were
I think they were all thinking, oh God, we've got a brand new player, which is terrible, because no one joins that queue to have fun with four other strangers. They join that queue because they want to get the shiny tokens that you get given for doing the random queue, because no one will do random pickup grouping unless they're incentivized. So the only place you get the special tokens for the magic thing is if you join the random queue and endure four idiots for 20 minutes who hopefully have all gone away and watched YouTube and know how to do this thing off by heart. I didn't. So we get this monster up on the ledge, and okay, I charge in again because I am basically a hammer, and all problems look like a tank and spank straight single target taunt fight. So I start fighting him, and we're doing all right, I think, but he's still not going down at all. And I'm noticing in peripheral vision that there's like some orange thing and some exploding bone particle things going on behind me somewhere, and I'm thinking, hang on. So yeah, by the time I sort of figure that out and walk him back to the thing, he's already run off and stomped the rest of the group. And the thing with boss fights in most MMOs, I suppose, is that if they obey the proper taunt rules, where, you know, a competent tank taunts it constantly, it'll only ever hit the tank, and the tank will only be the only thing that means being healing, then it all just gets a bit boring. So modern MMO dungeon design tends to have bosses ignore their hate list periodically and then just go and do a massive special attack on a random group member and then come back to the hate list and carry on as before. Just the healer's got something to do if God forbid you end up with a hugely competent tank who can hold the aggro the whole time. So anyway, there was a bit of that going on, and to be honest, it wasn't just me. We're not talking four other experts here. I think just because these other four people were saying nothing and seemed to perhaps know what a bit of what they were doing doesn't mean to say they did. Anyway, so yes, lots of wiping, blah blah blah. It ended up on this bridge thing, and well, the one chap who was getting quite frustrated was saying, look, he just said come, and was standing on the bridge. Now from that, I think I was meant to understand that as we should fight the monster on the bridge here and alternately rotate it when it does its big purple AoE blast, and that the monster only becomes vulnerable if you move it into the orange explodey shrapnel things which come from the walls each side periodically. Yes, I can see how that could be tricky to type, you know.
Yeah.
So what instead they decided to do was just leave. So we had a rage quit, a wipe, and that was that. So I left that thinking, Christ, this is awful. Why do I do this? And why does anyone do it? I can't imagine it was that enjoyable for the other four people either.
It's fine as long as you know what you're doing.
Well, exactly. You've got absolutely no... It's totally the wrong thing to do, to go into these dungeons knowing nothing and to, you know, in a spirit of camaraderie, work it out for yourself. That's just a waste of time. We have the internet. Why would anyone learn anything for themselves from first principles ever again? So basically, do not hit that looking for group queue. And I'm not just talking about Rift, I'm talking about any MMO at all. Do not join LFG until you have watched the entire video on YouTube of how to do the dungeon. Because the other people in your looking for group have got no time for your mistakes.
You're slowing them down.
I'm slowing them down, yeah, absolutely. So I did them the courtesy of not queuing again, because I was clearly getting in everyone's way and I was feeling a bit sorry for myself, all that. And you know what happens to me when I start to feel sorry for myself?
You start looking for new ways to feel sorry for yourself.
I start looking for new ways to feel sorry for myself and hurt myself, yeah. So after that, I decided to join a few PvP queues, because I figured that was something else people did at the end game, and it was also something else that you could earn the special magic tokens to earn the stupid end game raid gear for. So clearly, by game design, incentivized something the game designer wants me to be doing. So I thought, all right, we'll give it a go. So I queued up for a few random war fronts. Now you might be watching a video of a war front underneath this piece here, which actually against all the evidence went quite well, but don't take that to be any kind of guide. It was awful. I ended up in Port Sion, which is the sort of big city in the center of the starter continent that you can't normally go into. It's a big PvP map, and it was the usual panicked, frenzied mayhem of there's some flags and a lot of people, and some people have got red names and some people have got green names, and everyone seems to be immune to damage except me, and everyone seems to know what they're doing except me. And then when I do end up in a fight with a person, it's some nightmarish, wretched circle strafe stun lock thing. Basically, PvP in an MMO is almost exclusively about you trying to get behind them while they try and get behind you. And I don't understand it. Why can't they just stand there in front of me and hit each other and we'll settle it like men?
That's boring.
No, it's all about jumping around, it's about getting behind, it's about making sure that you can stun the opponent as often as possible. And then some MMOs will go with a global stun immunity. So I think Lotro is one of these that does that. You can theoretically only stun an opponent 50% of the time because when you stun them, they also gain a you cannot be stunned again buff, which lasts for 6 seconds or whatever. Basically, just to prevent total stun locking, yeah. which is not fun. Well, who wants to play PvP when you can't control your character? I don't know. Anyway, but I just got this weird thing. It started to happen. So we've charged in there on this Port Sion map, and I guess it was something to do with hold the flags for a number of ticks, and whichever gets the most ticks to 1,000 wins the overall match. And it fast became apparent to me that I had nothing really to worry about from the enemy. The enemy were just a force of red names that were running around and sort of surging backwards and forwards across the map, and sometimes some of them would kill me, and sometimes I managed to get a killing blow here and there. But no, the real fun, the real thing that I was starting to enjoy with this really sick, perverse pleasure was how much more infuriated can I make the rest of my own team? Because they just immediately, as soon as it looked like we didn't dominate the map from the first charge, you had two or three people on this team just start hitting team chat with the most blisteringly abusive invective I've ever come across in any MMO, and I did 2 years on Ralof's Egg. You know, I mean, it's they're not the enemy, the ones with the reds, it's the ones with the green. And I just thought, this is fantastic, because I just sort of started to build up this hysterical reactionism about it all. You know, the more abusive and caps locky and sweary they started to get, the more I wanted to sabotage our own team just to make them even more cross, you know? And that's terrible. I know, it makes me a bad person.
I tried to decide who's the bigger dick. I know, who's
the worse than that? I was just starting to sort of keep my own little mental score, not of enemies killed, but of friendly team members who'd clearly lost it big time, you know, blood vessels popping and stuff. And I just thought, this isn't much fun either, really. So I came out at the end of there. We didn't win. But during the course of that, I gained 5 prestige ranks, which is their PvP XP.
Yeah, the first 5 are really easy.
Yeah, obviously. I presume it goes up to like hundreds or whatever. I don't know. But just, you know, and also in Rift's one of these now, you know, opinion may be divided there, dear listener, on what you think about this, but Rift is clearly an MMO that doesn't think people should be given stuff just for taking part in PvP. A lot of MMOs will you know, give you at least some commiseration tokens so that you're not feeling like the entire half hour was a complete waste of your life, but you don't get squat for coming second in Rift in the war fronts. You only get the special magic tokens if your team wins. But Of course, it's random PvP. I don't think you can join teams to the Warfront queue. I think they may have a separate ranked thing you can do with teams if you want to get really serious business about it all. So, given that, the statistical likelihood is that 50% of the time you will accidentally end up on the team that wins, just because of the random distribution of solo players joining the queue. Or at least that's what I like to think. I mean, perhaps there's more maths to it that goes on behind the scenes. But so as long as you can, you know, at least reasonably hold your own and or whatever. And bear in mind, I'm doing this as a tank spec PvE class character, so that's never going to work well. It's great for flag defense, which you may be seeing on the video there, but not much in the way of actual assaulting stuff. God knows what would happen if I'd have tried it as the paladin spec, which essentially is just stand there and self-heal and hope they get bored and go away. Whereas the Void Knight, at least you've got some interesting debuffs and yanks and things like that.
Was that the paladin spec that last week was mentioned for being absolutely useless?
Yes, yeah. Well, that was the one I was... Yeah, exactly. There's two different ways you can spec a warrior tank, really, and I switched over, and at least the one I got now is a bit better in PvP, but no one wants a tank in PvP. I mean, a smart PvP enemy will just ignore you and run away because you can't do much damage, and you're going to take ages to kill. And that's basically all I can hope for, and I join these maps is that at least I'll take much longer than most people to be killed. So I got a load of achievements and unlocks and things and a bit more insight and a hefty reminder as to why I just steer well clear of MMO PvP in general, to be honest. It's very arbitrary. Very arbitrary thing at all. I mean, sort of following on from that, I had a go at the Conquest one as well. That was Warfront. The Conquest is an event that ticks along every sort of 2 hours or so. At which point you get an announcement when you're 65. You click the join button and you get put on one of three teams, and there's like a sort of instanced version of Stillmore, or I think possibly Shimmer Sand as well, the level 50 zones, which becomes a massive, here are flags all over the place and your team has to capture as many as you can. It's a three-way fight, three teams. Problem is, it's a real nightmarish just really badly designed thing from the word go. Okay, so the original thing is the window came up and you had three buttons. You could click join, join, join. There are three arbitrary teams, Dominion, Nightshade, and Oathsworn, Nightfall, Oathsworn, something like that. Basically, just three teams, and you pick one to join, and then the event will start, and everyone gallops off out of their little castle, and they have a lot of large-scale, zone-wide PvP. And the teams can be like, you know, up to 100 a side or something like that. Probably not really that many in technical terms, but quite a large-scale sort of PvP thing. But see if you can guess what went wrong with that. So obviously, bear in mind that if you're on the winning side with the Conquest thing, you get a load of the special magic tokens for the end game gear. So how would you go about exploiting that?
I'm pretty sure that anything I can come up with to exploit it would have been thought of by the developers.
Yes, you'd think so. Well, see, we're on Conquest version 2.0 at the moment. The first version, you had the three buttons and a join button under each team. So how about if everyone just keeps pushing join Oathsworn?
Okay, yes.
Yes. So Conquest version 1 was eventually mothballed and redesigned and scrapped, because what happening is that everyone just kept joining the yellow team, standing around for sort of 10 minutes or so whilst a lot of their more keen members on the yellow team ran out unopposed and just captured all the flags, then waited for the... Because if you get 85% of the flags in the zone, it starts a 5-minute countdown timer and then the whole thing's over. So people were just rinsing and repeating that every 2 hours, everyone joined yellow. So they fixed that in Conquest 2.0 by removing all three join buttons and just having a single join button now, and it will assign you to a random team. So how do you think that one's currently being abused?
Is it an awful lot of quitting until you end up on one team?
Close, no. No, what it is that by a stroke of genius, they decided that actually it's okay for teams of players to play together on the same side. So if you're the leader of a team and you push the join button, all of your team will be guaranteed to be on that side. So what happens now, before the Conquest timer starts, is that loads of people pipe up on level 65 chat, and they'll just set up 20-man raid teams and then keep pushing the join button all at the same time. So what effectively happens is that if you join Conquest solo, you are going to be steamrolled by a 20-man hit squad.
Wow.
Yeah, and and they always seem to be on Oathsworn as well. I'm not sure if anyone else is, if these teams are randomly assigned or what, but anyway. So, I mean, what can happen actually sometimes is that if the coordination is not quite spot on with the level 65 zone chat, what happens is you'll end up with two 20-man teams, and they'll accidentally sometimes not both end up on the same side, and so that you end up with an actual 20 versus 20 fight, which no one really wants, but no one wants to be in the team that backs down. Because
I think the game designer wants it.
Yes, I think what the thing with Conquest is that Tryon have just given up on it and ignored it and hope it goes away. So basically it is essentially a PvP token grind that happens every 2 hours that can get you your weekly achievement ticked off for the extra tokens there. So basically Conquest, if you're going to do it, for the love of God, do not join solo. Do join. You have to sign up with one of the 20-man squads before you go in there, or you are just going to get rampaged over. I'm speaking from personal experience because I didn't quite understand what was going on to begin with. But yes, there's got to be easier ways to earn special magic end game raid tokens.
I think so.
Anyway, that got me all thinking about my overall motivations to it. I did some analysis. So at level 65, I got some slightly better than... So I got some gear that I've crafted because I'm quite into the crafting, and it's somewhat better than the stuff that you fetch up at level 65 from just having done quest rewards and so on. And I had to go at some of the numbers there. So I picked out... You got stats on your paper doll, all the usual things, strength, charisma, animal magnetism, diplomacy, whatever. I picked the strength one because that's the one that powers everything warrior. You end up with the usual five stats, three of which are absolutely no use to your class whatsoever, so ignore. One of them is your class stat, and the other one is the one that generates your hit points. It makes you wonder why they bother with stats.
Yeah.
Why, you know? Anyway, so I had a look. Right, so my strength, my level 65 character, and do chortle along at home, 2,584. That's me with my usual workaday gear on, tootling about doing level 65, small group and end game stuff. I've started to think about that, and I thought, how much of this is actually my character? So I took all the equipment off, found a nice secluded and out-of-the-way area, because, you know, modesty and stuff. So with no equipment on the paper doll at all, my strength, what would you guess it would be?
Well, it's got to be between 3 and 18.
You do get stat increases as you level.
7.
I got 167.
Wow.
And I think some of that...
How'd you roll that on 3D6?
I think some of that was to do with planar attunement points as well, which you can't unslot. That's just extra bonuses that you buy once you keep dinging 65 over and over again. So I just thought, I'm a host, really.
Yeah.
It's the armor that's the hero here. I'm just a required biological component that animates it. So, you know, sort of 2,300 points worth of strength comes entirely from the equipment I'm wearing. And then I had a bit of a play around with the currency shops. You take your special magic tokens to a particular NPC and they got a big old list of armors and how many of these tokens you need for each piece and so on. I was looking, I had a bit of a sort of play with the cash, because it consolidates all those into the cash shop window as well. So the cash shop doesn't have just the things you can buy with the real money gem currency. You can use the cash shop to spend your normal in-game earned tokens to buy the stuff directly through there as well. It's quite civilized. You don't have to go to the NPC. So I was playing around in there, and I think I got to about 4,000 strength just going mad with all the tier 2 if I had everything type stuff.
Okay.
So I got to about 4,000, then I stopped counting, because there's a lot of other ways to gain strength which you don't actually get through the equipment and tokens and stuff. So it'd be quite believable for an end game character who's got everything, who's done it all, who's done, you know, rinsed and repeat all these end game raids, possibly to be in excess of 4,000 on their primary stat. That's just a warrior. I imagine it's similar for intelligence, for mages, etc., etc. So my initial thoughts of I've done this, I'm at 65, I've won, are nowhere near correct, because I reckon I'm possibly only 2/3 the way to my potential maximum stats, having fetched up and done effectively all the content that's there except the raids. So there's a lot of rinsing and repeating and a lot of incremental add more numbers, make number go up. And I just sort of wonder, why bother? What am I doing this for anyway? What does those numbers mean? They mean I'm better at endgame raiding a bit.
Yeah.
And then at some point this Plain Touch Wild stuff comes along, and I got off actually thinking about it. I thought there wasn't going to be a level cap increase there, but there's parts of the UI which suddenly have a selectable 70 bracket on them. Normally where you can pick the incremental bands of levels for gear and so on, it goes up to 70 now, and I'm thinking, hello. So I imagine Plains Touch Wilds probably will have some increased level cap and some green trash gear that will drop in the first new zone and all the rest of it. And some of that will probably greatly exceed the stats I've got now. And I just thought, bollocks, I'm going fishing.
You see, this is what the main reason why I don't play MMOs anymore.
Yeah, I think you're just, you've got considerably less tolerant of this kind of thing than I am, but even I have limits, yeah. So I've sort of basically given up on Rift as a single-player experience now. I'm going to keep it going as the Friday group thing with the static dungeons and so on, because I see that my character has no further requirement to be improved to be able to do that. There's nothing I can do in Rift will make me better at enjoying my Friday nights with my friends.
To the rest of the people on Friday night, I apologise for my colleague not making himself better so that the evenings run smoother.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Well, they could all do their grinding for a bit, I think. A lot of them are very casual once a week, as I think, and to be honest, they got it right, and I'm the idiot, to be honest. So there you go. So yeah, Rift, still going. And anyway, as a sort of optimistic sort of coda to all that, we went and did, on this Friday, we went and did Archive of Flesh. We did it in normal mode, but we did it only with four of us.
Wow.
And we, with only a bit of minor looking things up on wikis, got through every boss fight it presented to us, including the stupid invulnerable King Kong monster with the death glare.
So, sounds fun.
Well, and also I'm on text chat as well myself at the moment. It wasn't just voice chat makes everything better. I mean, I was listening, but we weren't able to coordinate using Mumble quite the way we normally do, which obviously gives you a bit of an advantage. But no, it is possible. And you know what? The thing that makes it possible is having, like, you know, three or four people you trust who you know aren't going to jump straight on you and kick your ass if you get it slightly wrong. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So, in summing up, I think friendship is the real treasure.
Yeah, that's not really a treasure, is it?
No.
Not at all.
Is it? There was knowledge, isn't it? I don't know. One of the two.
Yeah.
Knowledge and friendship. Both of them are both the treasures, probably. I'm going to stop talking now.
Yeah. Good. That was an amazing 25-minute rant.
It's one of those reflective, I'm sick of MMOs ones. Yeah, they happen every now and then.
Which game do you want me to talk about next? The AAA game or the massive game?
Oh, talk about whatever you like.
I'm going to talk a bit about Metal Gear Solid again then.
Okay, yeah.
Because I am really getting fed up with Metal Gear Solid.
More hijinks with oil rigs and balloons.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he's got a page of notes. This is going to be, a difficult one.
Some of the things about this game are beginning to bug me.
Yeah.
It is still a brilliant game and does some amazing things.
Yeah.
It suddenly clicked the other day that, the reason why you have the base in collecting people is it encourages you to stealth it up and not just go in and kill people.
Really? You think so?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why you have it.
Because you want to be taking people alive because they make you more powerful.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just charge in and kill everyone, nothing to steal.
Yeah.
Base doesn't get bigger, you don't get all the bonuses. Hmm. And do you think it's having that effect on you?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Because you are quite a gung-ho sort of person,
yeah,
normally.
For the first couple of people in a base, I will try and take the good ones, and then I'll just think, screw it, this is going to take hours if I do it that way, and I'll go back to headshots.
Is there an upper limit to the number of people you can steal? Could you just capture everyone and everything you see?
You,
because that's one way to win a war, is to make everyone be on your side.
Yeah, you could capture every single person if you wanted, but you can only have so many of them working on your base at the same time.
Oh, presumably you sell the rest off for parts or something.
No, they go into a waiting room. It's the most boring waiting room ever, I imagine.
Full of thousands of inadequate mechanics.
Yeah. Hmm. Why are you here? Yeah, Eagle raids across the line. Yeah, so the biggest problem I have with the game is it gives you this fascinatingly brilliant sandbox, puts you in it, and then the game doesn't step up difficulty to be worth playing.
Is it all just really easy all the way across?
It suddenly becomes very easy. Okay, you start having to take away advantages to make it fun, because if you've got the dog or the sniper, it is the dog especially. If you're sneaking it through a base, having the dog's essential, because everyone within 100 meters or more will get tagged up automatically, so you don't have to look for them. They just
The dog is basically a sort of radar.
Yeah.
Okay.
And okay, that's fine, but
that definitely helps if you're sneaking. Yeah.
Yeah, it means there's no risk, and the only time you die is when you think, oh, this is getting really boring crawling. I'm going to go guns blazing. And so it's making me now shoot people to get through it, because otherwise it's just tedious.
I've noticed that with Assassin's Creed Black Flag, is they added a new mechanic where if you look at someone long enough in eagle vision, it will permanently light them up with a red dot over their head, and you can then, from that point, you can see them brightly lit through the walls.
Yeah,
that's new and makes the stealth element of it much, much easier.
Yeah, this does that completely. So can keep track. Once you've seen everyone, you know exactly where they are. You can't be snuck up on unless you're not paying attention.
Yeah. Maybe people just don't have the patience for stealth gameplay these days.
It's not.
I mean, I have less patience for it nowadays.
That's the problem. It's not a good stealth game, and not for any of the usual reason. It's just not a good stealth game because it's too easy.
Okay.
And
yeah,
you will still die,
mm-hmm.
but it'll always be because you've decided, oh, I'm getting bored of this.
Yeah, yeah. I could easily do it the way they want me to if I spent long enough, yeah. but I'm bored now.
Yeah, I could do this, but it means crawling all the way around to the other side of the base and screw that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So it's balancing expediency versus efficiency, I suppose.
Yeah, so I'm seriously falling out of love with the game. and it was a pretty rocky relationship to start with.
Mm.
Everyone's saying it's the best game ever. No, it really isn't. It's so broken fundamentally.
That's a difficult thing to spot. People get, like, you know, quite awestruck by the graphics and all the noises.
And who made it.
Celebrity developer factor, perhaps. Or just sort of basic small-scale things like, oh, the gun battle feels really good. You know, it's quite a good sneak 'em up, this, that and the other. But it's trying to see beyond that to the whole design of the thing itself can be quite difficult, yeah, especially in a sort of short span review type context.
It's a collection of mechanics. It doesn't all fit together smoothly enough to be good.
It's a lot of clever ideas, but no general guiding cleverness, I suppose.
Yeah, and when it comes down to it, there's just not enough to do in the game to keep it interesting. I mean, okay, this weekend I've had to rescue people, I've had to steal stuff, I've had it's all the same thing. Sneak in to find something, attach a bloody balloon to it or a bullet to its head.
The balloon is fantastic. I didn't realise you could do whole shipping containers.
Oh, yeah,
that was amazing.
And tanks.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what gas is in the balloon, but the volume of the balloon is not bigger than the volume of the shipping container.
Well, presumably you're carrying that gas around in some sort of compressed container as well.
I think so, wouldn't you?
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, the game's making me increasingly annoyed.
Hmm.
And
is it time to push hard on the story and be done with it, do you think?
I'm 13% of the way through the story,
and
already it is so tedious.
You're not going to see the end of the story, then?
No, I'm not. The game is boring.
Hmm. Okay.
And it shouldn't be. It would only take a couple of changes to make it good.
Do you have to? Well, you shouldn't have to make your own handicapping to make it interesting. No. Oh, I'm only going to use the mouse and not the keyboard. You know, that kind of crazy is just desperation, really.
Only going with a revolver and 6 bullets.
Yeah, yeah. Try not to use any weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that, I suppose. Or you could find another game that's better, you know.
Yeah. Or also,
choices.
Also, another thing I've started doing is I've started going on missions as a shopping list for other stuff. It's got the usual, you've got this crew, send them off doing missions. But occasionally you'll need to send a truck or something. And so you need to find a truck.
Attach a balloon to it.
So what I did earlier, I did not have a truck.
Yeah.
So what I did was I triggered an alert at a base. So they would send a truck with reinforcements.
Press button, and then receive truck.
Yeah, yeah. And then a balloon to truck, send it back to base.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. It's sounding quite contrived, I suppose.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So
you're not caught up in the narrative and the journey and the characterisation of it?
The narrative is... Oh, it's got so many years
of
backstory,
could redeem
which
some
never
of this.
Fits together.
See, the reason you get away with this kind of boring going, you know, ad infinitum, climb towers, look at stuff, you know, or, you know, take down the one of 36 more or less identical looking bases, is that around and enveloping all of that is some kind of narrative adventure, some kind of story that you're quite invested
in. Yeah, but it's so preposterous, and unless you're really into the series, you will never get into the plot with this one, because the plot is just...
Oh, is there a lot of previous required reading?
Yeah, no, it's all, this is somebody you should know doing this now, and this is what happened between you, but you don't know that if you haven't played it. And even if you have played it, you probably got confused by everyone being called something very similar and all being silly, and yes.
Then... And even if you have played it, you probably didn't make it through the 90-minute cutscene in the previous game.
Yeah, well, the previous game's not as important as...
Fair enough.
Any of the others. So yes, no, it's really, really annoying me, and I do not like the game, and it's a... crying
That's
shame.
Quite quick, really. You were singing its praises not so long ago.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, if it
outstays its
maybe
welcome,
it's going to add some new mechanic or something in, but I seriously doubt it.
Well, you're how many hours in? You've probably seen most of how it 30. Works by now. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, no, 30 hours in, but to be fair,
a
large chunk of those hours was going doing photography the other weekend.
Well, you had it sort of AFK mining.
I didn't bother closing it.
Oh, you forgot to. just forgot to turn it off. Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah, so I'm probably only 20 hours in.
Mm. Well, Final Fantasy 13 had, like, tutorial pop-up hints 40 hours in, as I remember, so...
Yeah, yeah, during the last boss fight, probably. Yeah, so, yeah, it's a game that's really, really annoying me at this point, and I don't see how it can redeem itself without coming up with something completely new.
I saw you running around your oil rig zoo there, I mean...
Yeah.
Collecting things, ticking off the lists.
That's another annoying thing. Base morale.
Yes. That was brilliant.
Yeah, which just basically had been running around punching people because...
And they thank you
better.
For it, and their morale improves. So you've got this weird private military mercenary outfit who are well into their masochism.
Unless you go round and show your face to all of your crew, then the crew on your base get upset and start fighting each other, and half of them end up in the infirmary all the time.
Ah, okay.
So you've got
this base management thing, so, and it's a base you don't care about, full of people you don't care about.
The base is kilometres across.
That's insane.
And it takes you 10 minutes to cross the damn thing.
Ridiculous.
And it's on a spoke arrangement.
Yeah.
So if you were to go through and see everyone on all the platforms, it would take you hours.
Yeah, yeah. And even using the helicopter to try and get to different parts of it, you've got menus, you've got to wait for it to pick you up.
And then it flies around and round and round.
Does it in real time. It doesn't just cut to black. Yeah.
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 No, so, the entire base thing is a complete distraction and waste of time. Hmm. And I'm not even going to mention the PvP side of the base thing.
PvP? Well, you can invite your friends to come and fight you.
No inviting.
Oh, they just turn up?
Yeah, it just happens, even if you're offline.
Wow.
You get invasions even if you're offline, which is the most annoying thing.
Can you turn that off?
No. And you will lose good people that way.
Wow, that's harsh.
Yeah.
God. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, no, the game's really annoying me now and I don't like it.
Right.
So, do you want to talk about a game?
Yeah, we're naught for two at the moment so far, aren't we? I'm going to talk about X Rebirth then. Now, regular listeners to the show might remember a blistering review of it when it just came out about, what, a year ago or so? Something like that.
Yeah, a year and a bit, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's now up to version 3.61 from those bad days. It's had a few DLC expansions and things, and it's even got a Nexus mods section, apparently. I didn't really think it was popular enough for them to go into that kind of thing.
All the X games have massive mods.
Yeah, yeah. But so there's been a lot of work happened since then, and most of it's been fixes. I mean, pretty much every patch note, and there's been hundreds of them since, where the first has been fixed the cause of several other crashes, you know, as a standard feature that appears in every set of notes. So eventually, lots of time passed, and I thought I'd give it another go, have another look. Partly off the back of my Elite Dangerous sort of getting cool on that and not really wanting to push that much further. And I'm not for a moment suggesting X Rebirth is better than Elite Dangerous at all, but I suppose it's what you're looking for. So X Rebirth, the game famously Metacritic score of 33, I believe. It's on the last page on their PC games
That's impressive. All time.
Yeah, I know. And they're never going to be able to get that back because Metacritic don't take re-reviews, so that's a shame. But I've been playing it a fair bit lately. I've been quite enjoying it. And I think a lot of it has been this sudden fundamental understanding of actually... Okay, so a couple of very key bugs seem to have been fixed since I last played it, which have made the game suddenly work a lot better and perhaps nearer to what the designers originally intended. And so early on in the main story campaign, with its hilarious voice acting and awful plot and so on, you get given a mission where you have to go and liberate a load of prisoners off of an enemy capital ship. And you do this with the aid and support of a whole load of other capital ships. And I think that used to keep spectacularly going wrong because of the game scripting couldn't cope with it properly. It kept bugging out, kept breaking. And yeah, a lot of the time, the friendly NPC ships would just destroy the ship before you could do the stupid boarding mini game, etc., etc. So I reckon they've probably streamlined that considerably since then, so that it actually is a lot more hard-coded to just work, you know,
yes,
regardless of what else is going on. You know, I think they might make the ship invulnerable until it's finished, that sort of thing. Anyway, the upshot of that is at the end of it all, you end up with this crippled enemy destroyer with its engines blown out, its jump drive gone, and half of it missing and stuff. And you get your prisoners off, and hurrah, on to the next bit of story. We're off to over here to do some things. And I thought, no, I'm not. I'm going to go to a nearby station, hire a captain, an engineer, and a defence officer, and install them on this new ship that I now own. And that suddenly made the game a whole lot better, because previously, and I don't even know if this is what's meant to happen, what they intend to happen, but what happens normally is if you just follow the story, you know, the do this thing next waypoint mission objectives, you just disappear off and this Hulk sits there under your colours with no engines, no jump drive, no defences or anything, and eventually local enemy patrols will just fly past and destroy it, because they got this whole simulation thing from all the previous X games, so they've got that still going on to some extent. But I thought, well, no, what happens if we fix this ship up? And so if you hire an engineer and a captain, so you need a captain on it for it to move, you need an engineer on it to repair the various subcomponents and also its overall hull strength, and then you need a defence officer on it if it's going to fire back at anything firing at it. And if you put those three people on it and wait long enough for it to be fully repaired, it starts to follow you. And it's a terrifying piece of kit, it really is. It's absolutely made a complete mockery of all of the standard single-player combat dogfighting stages of the campaign that it wants me to do, because I just tend to... bring my big brother along. Yeah, say hello to my little friend. In comes this massive destroyer. I guess I've absolutely no experience at all, but I guess this is a lot like what calling in super capitals in Eve is like. You got this good fight going on between, you know, a couple of hundred battleships either side, and apparently a phrase is bat phoning. One side or another who's well connected with a much bigger organisation will just send out a help request, and suddenly a whole bunch of super capital mega ships will all drop on the fight and totally squash the opposition. And that's basically what I'm doing to the enemy in X Rebirth. Very satisfying, and it's really quite cinematic and spectacular as well. There's all like broadsides and salvos of point defence stuff going off, and I've started to keep regular save games, which is a habit I'd gotten out of.
Yes.
You have to keep taking regular save games in games like this. But what I found is that you can actually command... It's a real shame. It's an absolute shame, because so much of what everyone loved about X2 and X3, you know, the previous games, was this massive sort of almost RTS-like empire management thing involving capital ships and fighter squadrons and commanding them through the interface to go off and do things in your name for halfway across the galaxy. And that all does seem to still be there in X Rebirth, but it's so hidden behind this, you're a lone pilot with your sassy female co-pilot and the one ship does everything really badly, you know, modular, you can't change ship type thing, and this weird story thing they're going for here, that it's very easy to miss and overlook the fact that you can still command fleets of capital ships and blockade whole systems and build star bases, just like in the previous games. Only it's much, much better graphically in this game, and you've got much more of a sort of visceral first-person angle on it all, because you can actually dock on these platforms and run around and look at them. I mean, you'll probably see some shots on the accompanying video there of my ship, me running around on a platform which is literally on top of the big destroyer ship that I got. You can dock your stupid Albion skunk thing on top of there and then just run the whole game from the platform while you're doing the on foot bit. I mean, and once you're docked on top of this destroyer, and you can make the destroyer jump to other sectors, you can tell it to engage targets, and you can watch all that happening from the on-foot parts when you're on the surface, on the top of this destroyer. And then when you think it needs a bit of personal touch, you can then jump back in your stupid Albion skunk ship thing. And take part in the fights as well. But mostly it's for me, the game suddenly turned into a game about managing and directing capital ships.
As the next game should be.
Yes. And so I dug out my old save game, and I found that it had gotten itself into a bit of a state. I'd ended up with some of my little freighter ships trapped in a one-way, down the wrong end of a one-way system jump with a lot of hostile stuff around. And so for the next sort of five or six sessions, that became essentially Battlestar Galactica, the reboot series for me, because it was me and my destroyer trying to carve a way through to rescue this freighter from where it had gotten itself into, and then push away back to civilization through a whole load of really hostile systems and stuff. And it was great, sort of, you know, maneuvering the ship, getting the destroyer to clear a path, and then trying to bring the freighter through. And, you know, a couple of times it'd go wrong, there'd be spawns I hadn't anticipated, so back to the save game, give it another go. It almost became like a logic puzzle, and you know, the combat dogfighting in X Rebirth was never that great to begin with, and still hasn't gotten that better. But it turns out it's almost entirely optional, because, like I say, if you do the story up to the point where you've got this massive, you get great big freighter ship early on, and that's the tutorial on how to buy officers and install them on your ships, because it makes you do that on your freighter. And this Rehanus freighter thing is huge. It's like a capital ship. It's quite lightly defended. It's got its own point defence, though. But that can do all the trading you'll ever need. but you need to give it a bit of an escort. And so if you follow the missions through to the point where you capture this Tyrannis thing, which is the destroyer, you can then take that with you on the subsequent adventures, and it's making the whole thing a lot easier. Not necessarily easier, because it attracts a lot of attention. It doesn't move very fast, and so you do have to fight your way through instead of being all sprightly and just zooming around and getting out of the way and evading stuff. I'm worried I might be breaking the campaign though, because I got Mefrey to back out and got to the point in the story where it wants you to build construct an advanced factory in this sort of desolate system of refugees.
Again, all very X.
Yeah, so you build the factory. It asks for a big old list of components, trade goods that you have to actually get to the platform as it's being built, and I thought, oh god, half of this stuff doesn't exist in this little desolate system where we are. You have to actually go back to the original system, which is now full of hostile, evil corporate mega destroyers and stuff. But in that system are also some other neutral sort of or factions as well, who do have platforms, who make the stuff, who you can trade with. But those systems are in the jurisdiction of the evil empire, and so I've started doing what I'm terming shopping trips, which is to basically use the jump drives on this mega freighter and the destroyer and leapfrog them deep into enemy sectors with the platforms that are selling the stuff I need, and then take on and destroy their own destroyer patrols and stuff. It's effectively invade and annex these systems. Then I get my freighter to come in and do a bit of shopping. And then we both jump out again. And they've become operations. The whole thing becomes... I mean, this is almost nothing to do with the story. The story wants me to go and talk to some other NPC about some other thing that I just don't even care about. I want to get this station built, because you don't actually have to get the station built to carry on with the story. You just need to get it started. And then presumably later down the line, that's something you'd have to deal with. I'm doing that now. And I'm worried that I might be breaking the campaign a bit, because I'm going deep into enemy hostile territory and destroying their capital ships in a manner that you just could not possibly do if you were just in your own little fighter doing it the way they think you probably should. And it's great. But I'm just loving these shopping trips, the logistics and the organisations of carrying out capital ship-sized incursions into enemy space. And yes, it's sort of raiding. I mean, I'm paying for the goods, but I'm basically destroying all of the system's defences to get there and do it. And then getting safely out again. And some of these systems that have got the shop, got the goods I need in, they're protected by Tyrannis ships as well, which is effectively identical to the one I'm piloting, and they've got support and stuff. So it's no means a straight... I'm not stomping over the game at all, because you have to fight and win against these. And often, because for some weird reason, my mechanic can't fully restore my Tyrannis after each engagement and get the hull to 90%, but for some reason not any higher, probably to do with engineer skills or something. Whereas the enemy ones are 100%. So it's quite a challenge trying to engineer the fight in such a way that you still win. It involves you in your stupid little Albion skunk ship essentially being bait and decoy and sort of kiting the enemy destroyer. While
trying to make sure some of the shots don't go towards him.
Yeah, well, no, for quite a while it will aggro on you. And if you can spiral and corkscrew and survive long enough, then your own Tyrannis, you know, the destroyer, can get in behind. Surprise! And it opens up with its own beam lasers, and then it's got a head start on the hit points. But yeah, it's quite dicey, but very exciting, hugely cinematic as well. I'm really surprisingly enjoying it. I think X Rebirth's definitely at the state now where it's solid enough to play, whether that makes it a good game. I mean, there's a lot about its original design which hasn't changed, which a lot of people won't like still, but
it's still flawed.
It's still quite flawed, but I found a way to play it that is definitely very entertaining, very, very engaging for me. And I'll just see how, presumably at some point, the story will catch up at some point.
And make you do what you're doing now.
Well, yeah exactly. It will be then calibrated for someone who has some capital ships at their disposal, and then we'll see what happens. But yeah, for the moment, I'm massively overpowered. I wonder, though, because certainly X3 and possibly X2 as well definitely scaled the content based on your total assets, not just what you were flying. So if you were diligent, like me, I often did that to myself when playing X3, was diligently capture loads and loads of ships and carefully squirrel them away and keep them safe, and then find that the game had ramped up to mega destroyers as opposition because it assumed I was going to use everything I had against them all the time, and often I was only still in a fighter. So possibly that's happening in X Rebirth. I don't know, but I'm just really enjoying it. But yeah, so it's worth, if you did buy it originally, I'd give it another go now. I mean, the patching seems to have gotten to a point where it's playable now. Most of what's supposed to happen does happen. A lot of AI tweaks over the year of patching there. Just to things like, you don't tend to see the 15 or 16 freighters stacked up above the same port anymore.
Just
that sort of thing.
2 years.
My God. Given their due, yeah, okay, they released a crap game and they should be rightly castigated for it. They got a meta score of 33 there to begin with, but and a user score of 3.2, which is unusual to see such a close agreement. But they've really put the hours in and put the effort in trying to make right, you know, trying to do good, trying to get it sorted back out again. I mean, presumably at some point they'll have to stop and start working on a new thing if they want any more money, but they've really seemed to have put in a massive amount of commitment into getting it back on track, I suppose, over the year or two.
I think you have to. When you're a one...
Well, I don't know.
Studio.
Do you? If you get a Metascore 33, would it not make more business sense to just torpedo the entire project and start something fresh?
Possibly.
I don't know. They seem to have sunk a lot of time and resource and effort into making it workable again. They're never not going to have that 33 score now because that's the way Metacritic works. They don't do retests. But
that's because Metacritic's rubbish.
It has its own problems. I'm sure we'll talk about that another time. But I think if you did buy it and were slightly impressed with it before, give it another go now, see how it's changed. But definitely follow the story through and do everything you can to get the first Tyrannis destroyer ship you encounter, the one where you're getting the prisoners off of it. Don't just rush off and do the next story bit. Get that back up to running operation, because then it will happily follow you and absolutely murder most of the opposition it puts in front of you, which is great. And then it becomes a game, I don't know, I sort of try and draw comparisons with EVE. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I don't know what high-end, super capital end of EVE is like, but this is a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I'm going to stop talking about that.
I'm going to talk about Lego Dimensions.
Wow, God.
I wasn't going to buy it.
Yeah, well, that was totally not going to happen, was it?
No,
I know
it
you.
Happen,
you
yeah.
don't have any willpower when it comes to consumerism.
Well, especially when it's Lego.
I know, look at that.
What it was, the thing that got me was the unique base plate would make an absolutely fantastic fountain base.
Yes, that's right. Fountain in a town square.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, see, it's an interesting game. You've got to look at it from three points of view.
You need to paint a visual picture of what you've got on the desk there.
Well, it's a rectangle with a Lego Stargate built on top of it.
There you go.
And there are two L-shaped places which take three characters each.
Uh-huh. So this is a little bit like your Skylanders.
Yep, just like Skylanders.
Thing, a bit like your Infinity base plate.
So you've basically got these six characters there, and there's one in the centre as well. Mm-hmm. So you can have seven characters or equipments.
Right, okay. And so each of your characters are either your little Lego minifigs or small models of stuff.
They're Lego minifigs.
They're on special bases?
They're on special bases. They're special bases which have the RFID tag in them.
Yeah.
But the minifigs themselves are bog standard minifigs. Like the Marty McFly one, it is actually the one that came from the DeLorean Creators kit.
So these are absolutely interchangeable with normal proper Lego.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it already scores points over your Skylanders and Infinity there.
Well, that's the thing. It's got to be judged as would kids like it? Actually,
yes.
Don't care. How does it rate as a game and how does it rate as a Lego?
All right.
So
let's tackle those then.
So game-wise.
Yes. So it comes with a game, I presume. It's not just a Lego set.
Yes. It's by Traveller's Tales.
Okay.
So if you like the Traveller's Tales Lego games, boy, is this exactly the same thing.
I saw a little bit of the video, and you're scampering around looking for little Lego studs.
It's just the same as the Star Wars games, the DC games, all of them.
If you played and liked any Lego game in the past, then this is probably for you, yeah.
So what you have with the main game is you have a bunch of levels which are all different environments, and you basically work through the plot with that with your three characters, which is Gandalf, Batman and Wildstar. Wildstyle, sorry.
Righto.
And the Batmobile.
Mm.
And you work through all of those levels quite happily with what you get in the main base game.
Okay, yep.
And so at the end of each level, you've either collected everything that's on it, so there'll be a bunch of mini kit parts to find and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And also there's that bar that grows with how much percentage of cash you've got on it.
So you've got your sort of completionism aspects of it there. Yeah?
Then you have the open world versions of these levels. So whereas the Back to the Future in the game bit is basically you back in the Wild West doing a couple of things and a fight, then you leave.
Yeah.
In the actual Back to the Future one, which is a bad example actually because it's one of the ones you have to buy separately, it's the town square and you can go between the past and the future and there's a bunch of different things to do, like there's races, there's fix this, use this ability to do this, just the same as you expect from any of the Lego games. So it's exactly the same as all of them. The only difference being, and this is a major difference, in order to use a character, you have to own the character.
Of course, yeah.
So
it's sort of a game that's directly built around the merch.
Yeah, so it's all well and good saying, right, there's a gold brick there, I need someone with a laser to break it.
Yeah.
But unless you have someone like...
You haven't bought anyone with a laser.
Yeah, unless you have someone like Cyborg, you can't do it.
Ah.
So, yeah. And so you are going to... There is a minimum amount of money you have to spend to be at 100% this game.
Right, so very much pay to win then, I suppose, in the technical
definition.
No, pay
to complete. Unlike something like Skylanders, where you, and also Disney, where you're paying for lives.
Yeah.
Each model is an extra life.
Yeah.
This doesn't do that. You just the same in all the Lego games, you can't fail, you'll just run out of cash.
Right,
you won't
get
any cash.
Yeah, every time you die, you scatter a load of studs everywhere and off you go again.
So that's good, but if you want 100% it,
mm-hmm.
you've got to pay loads of money. But that's the same with all of these games, because there's always, all of them have ability-based bits to make you buy these extra things.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing is there's three different types of packs you can buy to expand it. Some are just characters, mm-hmm. some are more characters, and then there's the level packs. And the level packs give you the...
That's new content for the game then, I suppose.
Yeah.
New characters can be slotted into existing levels that you already own, can they?
Oh, yeah, they're all... it's all seamless. You have this hub world where you can go to all of the open world bits, but you can only go to the open world bits using one of the characters from that world.
Okay.
So if you want to go to the Back to the Future, you have to buy Marty or Doc Brown.
Yeah.
And to do a lot of the things in... the open world bit, like all the time travel, you have to own one of the time machines.
Quite a lot of content gating based on what physical purchases you've made out in the real world.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah.
Which, yeah, it's a little...
I'm not sure it's difficult to be cross about that. That's what this is. It was what it was always going to be.
Yeah.
A way to sell that.
And it's the way all of them are. Like, it was Skylanders with the gates, you have to have something of the right type. So whenever a Skylanders releases, the latest one is thankfully a lot better than this, but you'd have to have all of the elements or all of the whatevers to be able to get through all of the gates.
Certainly it's, I suppose you
could... So literally gated content.
You could call it exploitative, I suppose, but no, it, essentially at the end of the day, it's all luxury goods. No one's forcing you to do any of this stuff. Just don't play, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, you don't need to buy it, but then they do stuff like release a portal level pack, which has all of the voices.
It's you versus your willpower, really,
yeah.
isn't it?
Has all the voices and is quite funny and quite good and has a new song by Jonathan.
Well, Clark. I mean, is there essentially anything wrong with paying for good things you enjoy a lot?
No.
You know, I mean, you put your own value on anything.
And
I
think one of the reasons why this is going to be a success is people who like Lego are prepared to pay stupid money for Lego.
Well, of course, because Lego just costs stupid money anyway. I don't see how adding a computer game behind it all is going to significantly increase the cost already from what it is.
And you get stuff like the Portal Pack is a good one. You get your Chell character with her portal gun.
Yep, that's definitely a non-standard Lego piece.
Yeah, but also you get five printed companion cube sides. And believe me, these are going to... be worth something on Bricklink.
Yeah, right. Specialised Lego. So what? Your portal pack then, how much did that cost?
It's 30 quid, I think.
Right, and you get Chell, you get, what's that,
a turret
companion cube.
Yeah, the companion cube.
For 30 quid, that's quite a lot even by Lego standards, to be honest.
Lego-wise, it is terrible value. Game-wise, the actual level itself.
How much computer game do you get for 30 quid for that?
There was about an hour's worth of game through the story levels, but then there's the open bit, which is going to be hours of going around doing stuff.
Okay.
So it's.
It seems steep, but not aggressively so, I suppose. It was always going to be expensive, and Lego always is.
Yeah,
but.
They're cheaper than the standalone Lego games. But there's less content. I don't know if you can work back and work out if the percentage-wise is right on that.
Well, yeah.
But
sort of bean counting quantity, quanta
well,
of fun.
I could see them doing this. Instead of releasing those standalone games, to release level packs for this now. And
well, presumably it takes development time from the same studio.
Yes, and...
so if they're working on stuff for this, they're not working on the next standalone tie-in Lego franchise.
Yeah, and what they've basically got is a platform with one engine.
That's it, isn't it? This is a platform. It's not just a game.
Yeah.
What do you think about the long-term investment and prospects of it all? Is it worth getting into this with the assumption that it will be supported for a long time?
Or they say
lots
that,
of stuff?
They
or
say
is this all just going to get bored and they'll get bored and burn out of this in a year and not bother doing anything else with it?
They say that the initial game you buy and the pad, but more especially the game, because none of the other games do this, will be usable for 3 years, at least 3 years. So they're not going to release another base game in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Whereas Skylanders and Disney do one every year, so you've still got that 50 quid buy-in to get into the game.
Portal again every
time.
Yeah.
Disney doesn't make you have to buy the portal again. Skylanders says they don't, but then you don't get whatever special feature they're using, like the traps or whatever. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I suppose you do need to be able to update and refresh things every now and then.
Yeah. Well,
and how do you deliver that back to the customer if the hardware itself needs to be updated?
Why do you need to update them? When it comes down to all it is
presumably if you have new features or
like,
better technology or
no, there are no new features. There are no better technology. All of the Skylanders innovations was supporting a different number of objects which could go.
So technologically speaking, there's no difference between 1 year's portal base thing and another.
There shouldn't be, because all it is an RFID reader and tags.
You should be pushing content, or at the very least, you should be able to update in firmware somehow, via patching.
Yeah.
The reason you do a new one every year is to get more money, isn't it?
Yeah, you do. Yes.
Obviously. Yeah. It's all a big con.
It is all a big con.
Mm. But it looks very good, though.
Yeah, it looks good. It's fun. The game itself is actually good and fun and funny stuff. You play through the main game where it touches on every world.
It was very much
the
Lego Movie sense of humour.
Yeah.
Translated almost straight into the writing for this. So if your kids enjoyed the Lego Movie, then you'll probably enjoy the game that goes with this.
There was a fantastic moment when I was in Metropolis, on the back of a Dalek spaceship, fighting Sauron with Batman.
That doesn't come up every day. No. That was what sort of blew my mind a bit, the sheer breadth of IP that they've managed to secure and throw into this thing. That wall chart thing you've got
there. There's a poster here, which is brilliant radio.
I mean, I can read them out. But basically, you've got
DC Comics.
DC Comics characters, so a lot of Wonder Woman, Superman, etc.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor was there, wasn't he? Joker.
There's no Luthor model yet, but there's a Joker, Harley, Bane. Then there's a Lego Movie.
Yeah.
Because, of course, there is. Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that was a bit of a weird left field out there.
One of the first levels you do is you end up walking down the yellow brick road.
Fair enough.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Portal.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah, that's very odd.
Where'd that come from?
The Simpsons, because they do Simpsons Lego, of course. Mm-hmm. Jurassic World. Ninjago.
Oh, it's good they're supporting their own brands and their own IP. So you kind of got the impression that they'd sort of given up on Lego Creator and the Bionicles and whatever, yeah.
Doctor Who, Chima, Ghostbusters, which everyone's excited about.
Ghostbusters? Just why? I mean, it's cool and all, but why? Who sat down and thought, we need Ghostbusters in this?
That's a new film coming out.
I suppose it all ties into everything else.
And bizarrely, Midway Arcade, no one knows why.
Midway Arcade, I don't know what that is. Jurassic Park, Lost World, yeah. I mean, we were looking at the IMDb page for the voice talent for this, and pretty much everyone ever is in it. I'm surprised and saddened that I didn't get the call, but I think I'm the only one who isn't doing voice work on this, including you, dear listener.
Everyone is in it.
It's
statistically, some of them are in it.
It's ridiculous amount of actual voice acting that they've got going.
They've got two Batman.
A vast project compared to your standard AAA game. I mean, I don't know how much this cost to make or whatever.
A lot.
It's a huge, huge undertaking.
It's Warner Brothers and Disney going for it.
And they're really literally throwing almost every IP they've got at this thing. And there'll probably be a whole load more in season two or whatever.
Oh, yeah, there will be more.
It's insane.
Whatever films are coming out next year, there's going to be stuff for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Disney are going to have a real problem with this, I think, with the Infinity fight.
It should be said that there are two noticeable missing LEGO licensing deals.
Yes.
Here. One being Marvel, the other being Star Wars.
We haven't got any Marvel or Star Wars stuff in this Dimensions thing, because they're busy in
There's
Infinity.
There's no Pixar stuff either.
Yeah, they're all in. So this is like almost entirely an alien concept and outside my experience, but if I had kids, which should I buy for my young son who likes toys. Well, which you know, you can't afford both.
It's obvious
they're like £1,000 each or something.
Yeah, each model's £1,000, so you have to really be careful.
But the Pester power is going to be really strong, and I suppose some very wealthy and lucky kids are going to have everything from both. But if you have to pick one platform, and is that the kind of fight that Disney and Lego are sort of going at?
Even I succumb to the Pester power on Lego.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose I'd go with the Lego, I think, because at least you've got the inherent utility of Lego, which is that you can make other stuff with it. And the sheer breadth of IP that they seem to have does seem to have the edge on the Infinity thing. And no one gives a damn about Skylanders. What even is that?
Yeah, lots of people give a damn about Skylanders. Mm. The thing about this is the Lego game...
This is going to kill Skylanders, and it might do for Infinity.
No, it's not going to kill it, but... I've always said that Skylanders has the best game out of all of them. Mm. Now Lego has the best game out of all of them.
So Skylanders hasn't really got a USP anymore.
Yeah, it's got Spyro.
Fair enough.
No, actually, this year Skylanders has fantastic racing.
Mm. So, yeah, it's an astonishing thing. I'd kind of been ignorant to the whole thing, really, coming up. I knew there was some Lego Doctor Who thing happening, but apart from that, that was about it, really.
Yeah. Oh, another thing.
Yeah.
When you start playing, you should budget your first hour.
Yeah.
To going on screen through the instructions to building the portal. All of the instructions beyond the minifigs are in-game.
Oh,
and
clever.
As you play through, you modify the portal.
Yeah.
As stuff happens in-game. It's only a tiny modification.
It can't tell, surely.
It's these little things.
Yeah, the widgets don't have RFID in them. That's just you playing along.
Yeah.
God. Use your imagination. God. That much, that price, I don't want all to do everything for me.
You start playing through the character levels, like you're playing through the portal one, for instance, and you put together Shell, put her on the thing, you start playing through, bump, you need a companion cube, so bump, instructions come up.
Instructions for a companion cube?
Yeah.
Really? There's like 7 bricks there.
How would you build a cube like that out of Lego?
Actually, you need a special part on the inside. It's those L-shaped ones, is it? Yeah. Oh, God, I'm being flummoxed by Lego. Yeah. I give up.
It's the L-shaped ones, yep. Yeah. It's basically a snot building technique.
Yeah.
And then you've got all these bits down here because you can upgrade them in-game.
What are the widgets underneath all of that?
You can upgrade them in-game. Okay. So the items, you can upgrade.
But again, unless every individual Lego piece has some kind of internal network every other.
It doesn't, no.
It has no idea.
Yeah.
Ooh, nano Lego, smart Lego made of nano machines. Okay, I've just doomed us all to the grey goo apocalypse.
And the DeLorean has opening doors.
Oh wow! Oh, that's brilliant. I've got to get it.
Yeah,
I'm sold.
So yeah, no, it's really good. Hideously expensive.
It's amazing.
But assuming you're not buying it for ungrateful children because they won't appreciate it.
This is not a toy. Far too expensive. You'll break it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So actually, I quite like it.
Cool. Right, well, I'm out of things to talk about, and we've gone on for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm out of things as well. So
right, do the spiel.
You can go along to howtomurdertime.com and see our previous episodes and many, many, many audio ones, as well as all of this year's video
Look
ones.
Back in the archive to hear me slating X-Rebirth and how awful it is.
Just don't
hypocrite, Tim.
Just don't expect me to look up which episode that was. Also, go along to our YouTube page where we have the video versions of all of this and some other types of videos soon when we can get around to making them. You can also like them and subscribe to those, although don't really care about liking, just subscribe to them so that number goes up because it's an arbitrary number and I like arbitrary numbers.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So,
with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.